chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, and no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may have in the middle of it.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a really fine program this evening for you. And, I've been watching earlier today a little bit of the Oklahoma-Texas game up in Dallas. And right now, late fourth quarter, it's 41-39. My gosh, they're within two. They've got... I don't know if they got the 2 points. They did get the 2 points, so they're tied with Texas right now, 41-41. Anyway, that's quite a shootout up there. You're usually in the Cotton Bowl. And so anyway, we'll be watching that while we do some of this programming. We're recording now and then putting it out, and we're putting up clips. And our family has been connected with the University of Texas for years. My great-great-grandfather founded the medical school of Greenville Dowell in Galveston in the late 1800s, which eventually became the University of Texas Medical School at Galveston. So we're really involved in the University of Texas. Now the score is tied with about 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, so it's getting pretty good here. But first, we're going to start off with Stu Peters interviewing Dr. Jane Ruby. And she's bringing us up to date on what this Merck stuff is and all of this. And about, especially listen to this later on about the children. And the children are really, really a problem with getting any of this vaccine shots. So if I were a parent, I would not push this on or allow my young children, whatever age, to get this shot. That's my own, you know, opinion. Now, you're going to get opinions from a lot of other people, but this could be very dangerous and very, very counterproductive, and I don't recommend it whatsoever. But here we go with Stu Peters and Dr. Jane Ruby talking about the Merck and other shots, and especially these shots are affecting young people in a very, very deleterious way about heart problem damage. And once you damage some of the heart cells in that muscle, then they're not replaceable. So it's very, very dangerous. So here we go with Stu Peters and Dr. Jane Ruby.
And a lot of people are mistakenly thinking that this is some super ivermectin, and they're probably thinking that because Pfizer is coming out with Pfizermectin, while making the real ivermectin, originally manufactured by Merck, unavailable for you, despite the fact that there is a lot of trend that shows ivermectin works as a COVID killer. So now they're rolling out this Merck pill that you can take. But as we've learned with the rollout of these poisonous shots, deceptively called vaccines, there's always something dangerous lurking underneath with the pharmaceutical mass genocide cabal. Dr. Jane Ruby is here with us. She knows all about this Merck supposed wonder drug. What is this thing? And should people be wary? I mean, I am. Obviously, it's being introduced by Big Pharma. But maybe I'm wrong. What is it?
Well, Stu, let me update you and everyone else on what these companies are up to. Before I get to the Merck circus, let me just share with you. You mentioned Pfizer. You know, Pfizer has a protease inhibitor, just some enzyme crap that they try to use in HIV. There's a number for it, and it's supposedly stopping the virus from cutting open your cell and stealing your DNA so it can replicate yourself. But let me just tell you what they're up to in general. They want you to use the vaccine. vaccine, quote, they want you to use their pill, the protease inhibitor, and they're also working on an IV version, and they've actually had the audacity to say that you will need to take all three of these simultaneously for an indefinite period of time. Okay, if people don't figure out that this isn't really enough, okay, I don't know what will. So let me share with you what's going on with Merck. Yes,
I have a hard
Merck
has not laughing out loud. I mean, how do you not laugh out loud? This is a lifetime subscription. It's a new religion. Everybody has to get a shot every week. You have to pray to St. Fauci every Sunday. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. In New York, the new governor, instead of wearing a cross around her neck, is now wearing a vaccinated script around her neck, as she says that she needs people to go and be her apostles for shots in arms and go out and prophesize how the world is going to end unless they take these vaccines. In the meanwhile, they're killing people. And now they want you to take this plus that plus this plus that when, I don't know. I mean, listen, every expert that I have talked to on this thing has explicitly said that pandemics have a lifespan of approximately 18 months. And had we done absolutely nothing, no matter how many people COVID-19 would have legitimately killed, we would be past it by now. We would be looking back and saying, I mean, wow, I can't believe that thing wiped out half of the planet. Thank God it's gone. If we had not responded at all, COVID-19 would be dead, done, and over with. But these shots are making it linger. And now these pills are going to be weakening people's immune systems, are they not?
I want to prepare people, like you said, so you inform them, they're empowered, and they can make the right choices. Look, what Merck has done is it's put together a pill that it says it's basically a genetic manipulation. There's no question about it. There's no control. What this thing does is it gets in, and it kind of interrupts. It switches around DNA behavior so that the virus can't replicate itself. And it's a joke because viruses don't have their own DNA. They use the host cell DNA to replicate themselves. So if you take this medication, the mechanism of action is to get into the DNA and to stop it from replicating or to change the code. So it's been proven in mammalian studies in animals. We're mammals. It's been proven in studies that it does interfere with the DNA. This is essentially, Stu, a cancer-causing treatment. So not only are you not going to prevent COVID, but you're going to give yourself essentially cancer. And let me just share a couple other things about it. It's a perfect setup for carcinogenic and teratogenic, which is birth defects, to happen, okay? And in 2020, there was a scientist named Rick Bright who worked for the Trump administration. He became a whistleblower because he wanted to raise the red flag, and he said, do not advance this drug, molnupiravir, okay, this new Merck drug. Do not advance this into fast track because this thing is not safe. It is interfering with the normal replication of your body's cells. You know, your body renews itself. It needs its own DNA to do that. This medication, essentially, will interfere with that process. And in the animal studies, there were loads of cancers. So this Rick Bright actually got fired. He was ignored by the Trump administration, and the drug went on. And I want people to understand something. The federal government, with your tax dollars, has promised Merck that if they get their emergency use authorization, which, by the way, they're about to apply for any minute, that the government has promised to buy $1.2 billion worth of this drug. You don't think they're going to try to mandate molnupiravir? I mean, come on, give me a break. And they had some independent advisory board in the FDA. I've never even heard of that, okay? I'd love to know who's on that board that recommended to the FDA that they should indeed grant Merck this EUA for molnupiravir. I mean, this is a dangerous medication. It's like Yogi Berra said, you know, it's deja vu all over again. Here we go.
They're playing on fear once again, because fear paralyzes people. We have a virus with a nearly 100% survival rate that people are tripping over themselves, running, physically fighting to get to the front of a line to inject themselves with something that provides them with no immunity, that has extreme amounts of adverse events, including myocarditis and heart issues in young people. This thing is killing people. And now, because of the fear, they're able to raise the prices, as was just shown on the screen here. This thing is going to be sold for exponentially more than what it costs to manufacture. And now, if you want to get your hands on ivermectin, You're not able to do that because the pharmacists are pulling it off the shelves. Pharmacies are no longer stocking their pharmacies with ivermectin. Pharmacists are telling doctors, I need a reason why you're prescribing this now, second guessing doctors for patients who have a valid prescription for ivermectin, no matter what it is. And now instead, they're rolling out a pill to combat the fear of this coronavirus that now gives you cancer. And soon, there's going to be an injection for cancer as well. More with Dr. Jane Ruby in just a couple of minutes as we return on the Alex Jones Show. My name is Stu Peters. Before we get back here to Dr. Jane Ruby that I was looking at here, you should keep this in mind when we're talking about, you know, immunity and antibodies not counting. But, you know, you've got to take this vaccine. And if you don't take this vaccine, your life is going to be made a living hell, right? Well, how come that doesn't apply to 6,000 White House staff and Congress, which I'm sure that this has been talked about, the hypocrisy here? 2 million illegal immigrants at the southern border are not being forced to take this jab upon entry, and they're being given ivermectin. That's really weird because I can't get it. 8 million Chinese students in the United States, they're immune from these mandates. 8 million Chinese students in the United States. Meanwhile, American and Canadian students are told that they have to get the jab before they're allowed to return to campus and complete their degree. 500,000 homeless people? No jab for you. In Canada, two-thirds of the federal government is not mandated, which is about 200,000 employees. Does anyone have an explanation for any of that other than they know something that we don't? Dr. Jane Ruby has been with us, and she joins us again now. We're talking about this. Let me see if I can pronounce this right. Molnupiravir, which is a pill that you have to take or that you can take in lieu of the vaccine or along with this these shots. I don't know. We're going to be taking all kinds of drugs. The government will soon be in my bathroom stuffing everything I need in my medicine cabinet. I'm certain of it. I want to get into some myocarditis stuff, but you have something more on this Merck you were telling me during the break. Go ahead.
I just want to make sure, Stu, that people understand viruses do not have their own DNA. They infect you, and they suck out, they use your DNA to replicate themselves. Molnupiravir forces copy errors. That's the mechanism of action. It forces copy errors in the virus's attempt to multiply itself. What could go wrong, right? And by the way, all of these studies are predicated on the PCR test, which the CDC has recalled. It's disgusting. The company has essentially publicly lied. And let me read a few of the quotes by the company. This does not interfere with the virus's genetic code. Lie. It does not do this with humans in human cells. False. There's no long-term data, by the way, on cancer. And they also said there's no evidence of future or of potential, rather, for cancer causing. This drug is not capable of inducing genetic changes. Sue, that's the mechanism of action. They can't deny their own mechanism of action. And let me read to you just a couple of titles of studies that are already out on this warning. Some of them read like, This drug inhibits SARS-CoV-2 in vitro. In vitro means under a glass. That means they never tested it in a living, dynamic human being, but is mutagenic, meaning cancer-causing, in mammalian cells. Molnupiravir may cause cancer. You just read down the list. So I'm telling everybody, this is not a panacea. This is not a magic pill. Oh, we can get rid of, vaccines. No. No, you're going to be, like Stu said, you're going to be forced into cocktails and cocktails and cocktails. So anyway,
people who have signed up for these injections have signed up for a lifetime subscription to shots and to treatments to, all of these things that are not vaccines because they are now immunocompromised as a result of the shot and the genetic change. This is why we talk about things like antibody-dependent enhancement. When these people who've been inoculated get reintroduced to new viruses this fall, as we're now getting into the real flu season, which is the killer for our kids, then they're gonna experience all kinds of different things, massive organ failure and all of that. But I wanna focus on our youngsters because, kiddos are our whole purpose in life. At least speaking for myself, my kids are the most important thing in my life, only second to God. So. It's important to me to protect them. And as I look to California and I see that entire school districts are being mandated, and then you look to New York and you see Mayor de Blasio, the clown, the communist tyrant, forcing everybody to take these injections. Now there's lawsuits going on there. So we know a lot about our kids. We know a lot about the age group, you know, 12 to 17 in myocarditis. Are these numbers leveling out? Are these numbers exploding? Is this being overstated when I'm on the show warning about this side effect in our kids? Or is this a legitimate concern?
Stu, they're exploding, especially now that the 12 to 15 year old rollout for these shots is well underway. I just have to implore parents, honest to God, you just don't know what you're doing when you're tripping over yourself to shove your 12, 13, 14-year-old, 15-year-old into these, you know, these shot clinics. I'm telling you right now, the numbers have exploded. They're literally 20 times higher than the expected rate. The expected rate is defined as sort of that background rate that came out of, you know, the little bit of pivotal trial work that these companies did. And we're looking at the ages in VAERS from 13 to 23. Look, Stu, 80% of males between 13 and 23 are getting the afflicted are 80% are males. So look, you're marching your teen boy in there. You've got a huge risk. You've got a huge percentage rate of myocarditis. And I want to remind people, myocarditis is not just one and done, hey, I feel better, I'm going home, like a common cold. The inflammation itself leaves behind fibrotic changes, changes in the chemical composition. Your heart is an electrochemical organ. It depends on, all kinds of electrical charges, and it's all controlled by chemical, your sodium, your potassium. These things get disrupted. The pathways get disrupted. You are subjecting your child, if he gets myocarditis, with years of, well, hopefully many years, but years, unfortunately, of, feeling tired, back and forth to the cardiologist, lots of damage. It's irreversible damage, Stu. It's like scar tissue in the heart. The heart is entirely muscle.
I've been talking about this for a really long time, and we all have. And of course, we're framed in a light. This is all a big conspiracy. You know, and then you look over at the DOD again today, and you look at patents, and Karen Kingston brings forward, who's a biotech analyst, a former Pfizer employee. She tells me today that the DOD Joint Artificial Intelligence Office is tracking COVID vaccine deaths. But Cyrus Parsa just yesterday was a big conspiracy theorist for saying that there's some sort of an artificial intelligence extinction plan with these shots. You have to be, as a pharmaceutical professional, as an expert in the medical field, in the pharmaceutical field specifically, you have to be extremely responsible with the things that you say. And I don't so much. I can just wear it on my sleeve and say it how I see it. And if I'm right, I'm right. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Most of the time, we've been right. But I see this as an intentional, diabolical, sinister plan, including with this new Merck thing, because you mentioned something that really caught my attention. You said that there were problems with the reproductive system, or there was some sort of an issue with that, with this Merck thing, and we're seeing the same thing with these shots. They're impacting women's and girls' reproductive ability, making them infertile. Now we're seeing a ton of these guys, their balls are swelling up super huge, right? There's all this testicular inflammation going on, weird things happening. Meanwhile, the guy responsible for all of this, Bill Gates, tells the entire world right out in the wide open that we need to depopulate. So in a responsible type of way, and real quickly, because I got a minute, do you think that I'm being hyperbolic? Am I wearing some tinfoil hat here? Or is this, do you view this as being evil and intentional?
Stu, I have to say that from my perspective as a medical professional and a pharma drug development, there's no therapeutics to these shots, to these pills. There's nothing beneficial. Instead, we're looking now at permanent heart damage in young teens. We're looking at miscarriages, birth defects, strokes, heart attacks. The volume is incredible, and it tells me I can't deduce anything other than this is intentional. And I'm particularly concerned. I'm concerned about everybody and everything, but I'm concerned about our military. Our military could potentially be decimated right in front of our eyes. They're going to be also mandated to take these cocktails. If they don't leave now and reject it.
And once they're kicked out, they're going to be replaced by three people who will, and then they'll march in line, and they will help to inject everybody in this country or around the planet. That's the way to take over, without firing a shot. The threat of the military, the threat of prosecution, the threat of being criminalized for going to a school board meeting, that is the state of America in 2021. Dr. Jane Ruby, thank you for your constant, responsible reporting on all of this and for joining us today. My name is Stu Peters. Fourth Hour of Alex Jones, the War Room is up next. Stick around.
Next coming up is Tucker Carlson on Friday, his program, and he talked about some of the draconian things that President Biden and his administration is proposing to go into your own personal bank accounts and things like this. And there are people that are just really becoming outspoken about doing such a thing. And also, I did learn that there's not been an executive order on any mandating of the vaccines for these corporations. That is a misnomer. And that has not been done, but it's been widely circulated out there that there has been executive order by President Biden about mandating where over 100 people, all of our corporations have to do the vaccine. Well, that hasn't been done yet. So we've got to really keep our ear to the ground, closely to the ground, to really understand what's really going on here and try to get a grasp of what we need to really pay attention to. So coming up is a clip of Tucker Carlson, and they're entertaining the idea that actually this fascist dynamic and trend is coming from the left, and it can also come from the right or the left. But this time, we're seeing it with all the draconian stuff about violating our personal information and so forth and so on. It's piling up. And the evidence then is that this draconian fascist state is being put in place by the left, by the Biden administration. So here we go with Tucker Carlson laying that out.
If we allocate power based on who's the most popular with the public, and that's the basic premise of democracy, the Democratic Party is in very tough shape. And they know that. And that may be why, according to polls, Democrats now overwhelmingly want the government to make their political opponents shut up. More than three-quarters of Democratic Party voters want the tech companies to, quote, restrict false information online, even if it limits freedom of information. Think about that for a second. More than 60% of Democratic voters want the federal government to, quote, control that flow of information over the Internet. So all of that contravenes the First Amendment to the Bill of Rights, which is the very core of our system of government and of our culture. It's what makes America great. And now the overwhelming majority of Democratic voters are against it. So that's authoritarianism. There's no other word for it. And it's ironic considering for 4 years, prominent Democrats told us we were living through a fascist system. Donald Trump was a fascist. But, of course, they were describing their own attitudes. So we're going to spend the next hour looking at the rise of authoritarian impulses on the left and try to figure out where those came from and where they're going. Now, none of this is brand new. You'll recall that Democratic Party politicians have been pushing for censorship for a long time, certainly since Trump won in 2016. They blamed that victory on Facebook. Here's Ed Markey in last October, for example, calling for more censorship.
The issue is not that the companies before us today are taking too many posts down. The issue is that they're leaving too many dangerous posts up. In fact, they're amplifying harmful content so that it spreads like wildfire and tortures our democracy.
Oh, they're not censoring enough, because these posts, according to Ed Markey, who will literally say anything, you should know, are, quote, dangerous. But Markey never explained what was dangerous about them. But you got the message. They all did. A few weeks after Markey said that, Big Tech silenced him completely, and virtually nobody said anything about it. So it didn't stop. It merely accelerated. Now, Democrats and their allies in the news media have decided to drop all pretense. Jonathan Chait writes for New York Magazine. He's considered smart on the left, one of the weirdest people practicing journalism today. He just published a deeply revealing piece in New York Magazine. Here's the headline from it, and we're quoting, "Anybody fighting Joe Biden is helping Trump's next coup. All Republican politics is now functionally authoritarian." Right. Because Republicans are calling for censorship. So that's how the Democratic Party is responding to the collapsing poll numbers of their president. They're accusing the other side of authoritarianism while practicing it themselves. Right. So you'll recall, and our media class applauded. And yet, because justice is no longer meted out equally, if someone dares to dishonor the legacy of St. George Floyd, the New York Police Department's Special Hate Crimes Division springs into action. Here's an actual quote, by the way, from this week. On October 3rd, 2021, at approximately 10:15 a.m. in Union Square Park, a person on a skateboard threw gray paint on the face and base of a statue of George Floyd. That's the NYPD bulletin. Information? Contact us! Exclamation point. So that's not really hypocrisy anymore. It's hierarchy. What they're telling you is that crimes against their ideas are the only crimes that matter. Well, that attitude has no popular support in this country, so you can only enforce it by force, using surveillance to root out people who've got the wrong ideas. And that's exactly the basis on which the Biden administration is proceeding. That's why the administration has now given itself the authority to monitor everything that happens, for example, in your private bank account.
An effort that I know you're a proponent of for the IRS to collect more information and more tax dollars, but more information about taxpayers' bank accounts, including annual cash flows. And I was curious whether you think the IRS has the wherewithal to actually do that.
Well, of course they do. And a simple way for the IRS to get a sense of where that might be is just a few pieces of information about individuals' bank accounts.
Did you see that? The most interesting part of that exchange was not the Treasury Secretary. She's embraced authoritarianism full blown. It's the creepy little shill from CNBC. And the question is not, does the IRS have the right to snoop into your bank account with no evidence you've done anything wrong? His question is, do they have the wherewithal? Do they have the manpower? Can they actually pull it off? To which he says, of course. We're the government. We can do anything. So after January 6th, this show reported that Bank of America, quote, proactively rooted through customers' private financial information to find individuals who, quote, met thresholds of interest. They spied on their own customers, and then, like the good East Germans they are, they passed those names to the FBI without telling anybody involved. The Democratic Party approves of this, and they want to make certain this kind of invasion of privacy is permanent. It's codified. And, of course, they want to control your children, too, the center of your life. They'll destroy anyone who tries to stand in the way of this. Bradley Keyes, for example, we could give you a million. Here's just one. Keyes was a track and field coach at Pembroke Academy. He was fired because he didn't think it was good for his athletes to have to wear masks as they were playing tennis. Watch.
My goal is to get these mandates removed. And it's not just track and field. It's tennis, it's baseball, it's every outdoor sport. Masks will be worn all times, practices and competitions. Tennis, wonderful example. Singles tennis, you go watch practices, everyone's wearing masks. Competitions, they will be wearing masks, even though they're 30 to 60 feet apart on the courts.
So we're going to tell you what we've told you 1,000 times before. None of this is science. There's not a single study anywhere in the world that suggests kids benefit by wearing masks as they play sports outdoors. In fact, they are hurt by it. That's both common sense and the scientific consensus on the question. But the fact is, it's happening anyway. And that's the point. They don't feel the need to justify their decisions with science. And in fact, they will punish actual scientists who object to these unnecessary medical mandates. Aaron Carity, for example, is a physician at the University of California. He's the director of the medical ethics program at UC Irvine. Not a small job. He's just announced the university has, quote, put me on leave. Why? For challenging their vaccine mandates in court. Oh. So it's not a question of whether vaccine mandates help or hurt or are good for public health. It's about power. And anyone who challenges it is crushed. The weak are hurt the most profoundly, as always. Here's a story we'll be telling you a lot more about it in coming weeks, about a woman in Colorado who is facing death. She's got stage 5 renal failure. She's just been denied a kidney transplant. Now, she has a donor, a willing donor, who has a kidney for her. Everything is ready to go. But according to the health system there, the woman and her donor have not taken the COVID shot. The donor explained that her vaccination status, quote, does not affect any other patient on the transplant list. How can I sit here, the donor asked, and allow them to murder my friend when I've got a perfectly good kidney and I could save her life? That's a great question. No one in the Biden administration has bothered to answer it or even think about it. Instead, they're forcing anyone who raises these questions to be quiet. That's not a democratic system. That's an authoritarian system. Douglas Murray is one of the smartest people we've ever met. He takes the long view on everything. He's a historian, a best-selling author, and he joins us tonight to assess the great divide in American life. Douglas Murray, it's great to see you. Thanks so much.
Great to see you too, Tucker.
So it does seem, and I'm sure you feel this way in your own life, all of a sudden you find yourself with sympathy toward and making common cause with people you've never agreed with on anything over the past 20 years, and you realize the one thing that you have in common is the most important thing, which is you're for a free society and so are they. That does seem like the divide.
That's definitely right. I'd add one other thing to that, which is that I think that there have been an increasing number of people on the left in America and around the world who are just seeing that their own political side has gone wrong. They've seen that it's gone off. And this is, to my mind, unended business from the 20th century. It's been my profession for a long time saying this, that after the 20th century, we know where the right can go wrong. We yes. have left as unexplained, unbothered about business, the question of where the left goes wrong. And the left is very clever about this, because where is the right? You know, it's very obvious when the right, when certain people on the far right, alt-right, some people in America like to call them, start to talk racial games. That we know is where the far right goes way wrong. But what about the far left? Well, when it is expected to go wrong, and not everyone seems to agree they do, a lot of people seem to think that, you know, you keep running left and the worst you get to is veganism. But if you don't take that view, what you find is all the way along to the left, you never get to the gulag. What you get is this amazingly clever dictionary they've got, so that, for instance, they talk about equity when they mean discrimination. They talk about fairness when they mean unfairness on an amazing scale. They talk about justice, and they really mean revenge. But it takes a long time for people to see through this, and by the time people have seen through this, we're way down this track.
It's interesting that all of a sudden, a lot of the debates that we've been having, in my case and in yours, since we've both been involved in public debate for a long time, that were really at the center of our professional lives, look almost meaningless compared to this. The question of how we're going to, you know, can you live in a country where you can follow your own conscience and say what you really think? How
Absolutely.
Is it that we didn't see this coming?
Well, some people did see it coming. I mean, as I say, this unfinished business has meant that the left has been able to push an incredibly long way very, very easily and very fast and relatively unresisted. You know, I mean, we see it now with, I mean, in historical terms, it seems hilarious to say it, but basically committees on the public safety. You know, as Robespierre would have called it after the French Revolution. You know, these committees on the public safety that effectively exist now that we see around the world. I mean, America's not as far down the road as some. I mean, we've all seen the footage from Australia where you see that, you know, the police are battening the public down for the public safety. You know, for the public's well-being, they have to be bashed around the head by the police wearing masks. Somebody said this week, you know, the joke that there's a risk in Australia of a shortage of hospital beds and people hospitalized by the police for their own good. I mean, we are at an extraordinary stage where everything from public health to education and everything else has been just hijacked by this leftist language, and not enough people have stood up on the left or anywhere else to say, no, we see through this. We know what you're saying.
People who don't stand up are complicit in it. Let's just be honest about it. They're cowards, and they're allowing this to happen.
Absolutely.
Douglas Murray, a great man. I appreciate coming on tonight. Thank you.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you, Tucker.
We are being intimidated. And Roy Matchers, who passed away earlier this year, wrote some very, very beautiful, you could say, advice. And one of those papers, one of those white papers, was neutralizing intimidators. And I'll read you from his article here, his first paragraph. And he says, injustice is powered by one single purpose. It loves to get inside and control you. If we were all able to cleave to what we were born to know is right in our hearts, then evil could never convert us nor advance its various causes. Beyond genocide and the persecution of the innocent, battle lines have already been drawn before between good and evil forces on three major fronts. Committed haters have targeted our nation, our homes, and our minds. But he founded with his family and his sons and daughters a Foundation of Human Understanding, and that's FHU.com. And I would suggest that you go in there sometime and read what he had to say. He says in this paper on intimidators, how to neutralize intimidators, one of the paragraphs entitled The Key. Injustice is, here's what he says, injustice is powered by one single purpose. It loves to get inside you. Your patient is equivalent to holding up a mirror to a vampire. The frustration of not getting to you will produce a shaming goodness. So instead of their evil getting inside of you, a light shines through you and enters the tormentor, causing first anger, then fear. In time, it may awaken them to the reality of their own common sense. He was ingenious in his approach, and he wrote so many books on a lay, from a lay viewpoint. And so what we must do is I have translated, you know, his teachings. I listened to him for several years, and he was broadcasting out of WOAI, I think, is when I was listening to him. But then he moved his operation from Los Angeles and sold his property and moved up to Oregon. Okay. And so when I first listened to him, I used to think he's full of hate and everything. But then I realized one night I was driving around by myself and I said, my gosh, he's preaching forgiveness. And that's what I've been able to do in my life, not always successfully. But I drew upon, you know, Jesus Christ's teachings of forgiveness. And that's why I have focused in on that and Roy Matchers and many of the other, the leading, you could say, minds of humanitarians of all time have discovered that you can't harbor resentment. Resentment is a mechanism that your tormentor uses to control you. So when to overcome that, you cannot come back with hate and resentment. You must be patient and come back and try to understand, because all tormentors are victims also. So the psychopaths of the world, they grew up in abusive homes or whatever, and they were victims, see, of a very abusive, torturous type of mother or father that beat the hell out of them or whatever. Or a father that was an alcoholic, and that's very common out there. But now we have in America, we have more and more affected, traumatized children that have come out of broken homes, latchkey type of kids. And so we have a tremendous, you could say, community of tormented, broken, traumatized young people. And they become easy targets for you could say, ideology that says, hey, everybody is bad. These business people are bad. They're just taking you to the cleaners. We need to burn their buildings down or whatever. And that's some of the types of arguments that we saw this last summer when they started burning, you know, this, you know, 2020, when they started burning summer before last, that when they started burning Minneapolis down and so forth. So what they've done over coming out of England, I will say, and the Fabian Society, they've promulgated a system of transforming the world into a world communist plantation for the lower classes. And thus, what I'm trying to say here is that the lower classes are going to be subjected to a corporate fascism. And we see that corporate fascism organized through world, you know, economic forum. And we see it through the Bilderberg Group. We see it through the Council of Foreign Relations, the Tavistock, the Aspen Institute. And all they're doing coming out of the French Revolution early on was a communist movement that Marx picked up in the mid-1800s. But in about 1760 in France, you had very, very radical activists talking about socialism and so forth, of a perfection to perfect a society. And this is what they've been trying to do, is come up with some perfect political system. The only problem with formatting that and formulating that is they always overlook human nature and its frailties, shortcomings, and weaknesses. Yes, deep down, we want to do the right thing. But as we're born into this world, we're beginning to be traumatized by parents who've been traumatized, and then they've been traumatized by their parents, whose parents, who in turn have been traumatized. It's a never-ending process. But no one really appreciates what's going on because they've been deluded into a delusional state where they're not really aware that the trauma visited on them in many cases is very, very subtle, okay? It's so subtle that they're not really aware of this false self that I believe has been born, you know, been spawned out of this trauma, see? And that's what I'm writing about and talking about. And I'm just going to end the program here with some of these ideas and some of the things I picked up from Lloyd Masters, some of the things I picked up, you know, over the years from different other talk shows. And I've read the Bible. I consider myself a simple-minded Christian. We don't preach gospel and scripture on this program that much, even though I am what I would, you know, describe myself as a simple-minded Christian. And when I say simple-minded Christian, what do I mean by that? What I mean is that there have been many, you could say, versions of the Bible that have been rewritten and reinterpreted and translated over the centuries, okay? But I believe if we get back to the real simple Ten Commandments, the Golden Rule, and then we get back and we look at what Jesus was teaching that's cited there in the New Testament. The New Testament is the new way, see. And I believe that that is the way of forgiveness and love for your neighbor. And I believe with that kind of a comeback to those tormentors that Roy Blanchard talks about in his paper that I was referring to earlier, then this is a means by which we can overcome this evil with goodness. That I think the Bible at one point says that, see, to overcome evil with goodness. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that you don't perceive what evil is, and it doesn't mean that you wipe it away through some ivory tower indoctrination that there's no evil out there. Yes, there is evil. I'm sorry that some of these college and university professors are teaching there's no evil out there, but there is. When you hurt people and you hurt children, you torture people and harm people, those kinds of actions, especially when it has to do with young children, these are the most evil of all. And when you're talking about the type of personality, he's talking about sociopaths and psychopaths. And there have been Cults in Our Midst, you know, was a good book. There have been many, many people that have looked at the cultic types of operations, and there's all kinds of religious cults that recruit people, and they love bomb them. They'll get some new perspective member of their group, and they'll get them around a table at a coffee shop and look what they call love bombing. See, these are some of the techniques that these cults use to recruit people. They'll give them personality tests, if you ever heard of that, and then find out what the weaknesses type of personalities are, then they can more easily recruit and manipulate those people. And even some of the largest churches around have used personality systems and identification methods to control the anagram method was used by some of the Catholic church groups and sects over the years. So the Enneagram has been a personality typing of 9 personality types that has been used by certain Catholic sects, say, to identify and then control people. And then others have said, what is confession about, but to use it as a intelligence operation to find out who's doing who. See what I mean? And then manipulating the different members of your cult or of your religious, you know, church or whatever you want to call it. My opinion is that any organized group is cultic. And I think we're born into a family, but that family has cultic, you know, characteristics also. The family teaches us certain things about how to act and how to respond and how to treat other people. Now, that mother and father, if they came out of a fairly good family and were taught very good things about a good moral base, then they'll pass that on. But the other problem with this is that the parents have been indoctrinated by the world, by worldly things. But they don't really understand the effect that they've had on this. Now, one of the things I'm going to recommend us to address this COVID-19 problem is to go to our site, thesecrettruth.com, and scroll down to those 21 articles that Fran Schurer, God bless her, has written about 9/11 truth. Well, they can be applied directly to this COVID-19. Because many of the things that people are not opening their minds up to and accepting are stopped by those psychological mechanisms and barriers that keep them from a full understanding. I want to thank everyone out there for staying with us and trying to begin to understand. And we're gonna end this program, the last you could say 10 minutes of it, with some of Robert Barnes' interview about giving us advice on these up-and-coming confrontations with government or whatever. And Robert Barnes is a really terrific attorney, and we're going to end the last part of this program with that. So thank you very much for listening to us, and we'll just take that to the end of our music, our exit music. Thank you very much for listening.
All right, wild, wild stuff going on in this crazy world, folks. Robert Barnes is with me. BarnesLawLLP.com is the website. The Twitter @Barnes_Law. Okay, so surveillance. Surveillance seems to be the point of so much of what they're engaged in right now. Story on Infowars.com. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen defends Biden administration's plan to surveil Americans' bank records. They want your bank records. They want your health records. They want a sample of your DNA just in case. I mean, they want absolutely everything. And they don't want it for any good reason, do they?
Not at all. I mean the end game has always been disclosed by Bill Gates for a decade now. And that end game, you look at the technologies he's patented, you look at what he's invested in, you look at what he's been interested in, you look at what he's talked about, you look at the projects he's helped finance around the world, and the ultimate end game is a little quantum tattoo or digital chip that has all of your information on it.
Right.
That is trackable and traceable at any time from anywhere, any place in the world by the people given an authorization to do so. And so And they're going to sell it as a privacy mechanism. They're going to sell it as a convenience mechanism. I mean, that's how they sold it in India. They said that, you know, if you have a little quantum tattoo or form of digital bioidentification, it will help you get places that you need to get to. It'll help you get money when you need to get money. Even though he's admitted in other conversations with the great James Corbett documentary that captured him on tape saying these things, well, we can use these things for other purposes, too. I mean, ask yourself, why is this guy developing a digital chip that can release a chemical into your body, the idea being it's some vaccine or something, that has remote control accessibility?
Right.
You don't need remote control for your own thing. that works within 15 miles of you? I don't think so. So this is the end game. It's always been the end game, and because it's about control. It's always about control. It's about power. These are all control freaks at heart. That's who they really – what happens when you have these misanthropic big tech geniuses who get to dominate the world – is Bond villains go from the screen, from the movie screen to your TV screen.
Right.
They go from fiction to real life. And that's what you're seeing. I mean, Bill Gates is like right out of an old James Bond. Back when James Bond films were legit. Not No Time to Die. No spoiler, folks. They whack him at the end. The,
what?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how do you do that to James Bond? It's just outrageous. But the old school Bond movies, that's who these guys are. And if you understand that about them, you can predict them and you can preview where they're going and how they're going to go about it and what angle they're going to take. And it's all about control.
Yep. And that's this point I emphasize all the time, because people think it's about money. They think it's about, no, money is the route to control. Surveillance, that's the route to control. It's all about control. It's all about power. And you can even understand it just watching old interviews with Bill Gates from like the 90s and stuff. You can just tell the way that he thinks. He sees all of humanity in all of its glorious, cacophonous, wild unpredictability as a problem. He doesn't like that. He wants everybody to do their part in their place. I mean, he would be much more comfortable looking at an anthill than he would looking at an American city, because the ants know where they're supposed to go, when they're supposed to go, and they never deviate. I mean, it's that simple mindset of, we want the world to operate like our computer systems operate, because our computer systems never disobey us, right? Right,
exactly. No, unless you're Bill Gates and you always have virus problems.
That's a whole other issue.
Exactly.
Virus problems.
You go back and look at his deposition during during his antitrust cases.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this was a guy who had sold technology to the Defense Department, and he built a back door into it without them letting him know.
Right.
So it's not only about control, but his control.
Right.
And his agenda. And this was, I mean, his father's this way. I mean, you just watch Bill Gates talk about the people dying, they might die from the vaccine.
Yeah.
Because he talked about this early on.
He laughs at it.
He couldn't quit smiling. He was, it was like, I mean, Alex and I were talking about, it was very much like Peter Sellers' character from Dr. Strangelove. Right?
Right. Yes,
like
exactly.
Bill Gates is like, my fear.
Right.
He couldn't help himself.
Yeah.
That's exactly, I mean, and that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a once in a lifetime, like as bad as George Soros might have been or the Koch brothers might have been. Nothing comes close to Bill Gates. This guy has masterminded. He bought off all the public health authorities, decided about 15 years ago that was the way to go. He looked at the eugenicist movement, tried to replicate it. He and his father have admitted this, because they've said they looked at the Rockefeller Foundation and that was their model for what they were going to do.
Right.
Managed to create a foundation that makes money. He is two times richer than he was when he started giving away all his money.
Right.
Why? Because it's power. For him, that money isn't about his hurt and having another yacht. That money is power to get what he wants.
Yep.
That's how he sees money. It's not about self-enrichment for its own sake. It's about, if I have money here, I can have power here, I can have power here, I can have power here. Because that's what he did. I mean, he gives as much money to the World Health Organization by himself as the entire United States government.
Right.
He has bought off. I mean, Politico, 2017, wrote a piece of whistleblowers saying, this is scary. The Gates Foundation is buying off all the public health authorities.
Yep.
So, I mean, people should ask themselves, how did the whole world follow a Chinese model for handling a virus that is completely ahistorical? Like when we were talking about the vaccine possibility over a year ago, it was, this vaccine isn't going to work for one reason, clearly above all. There's never been a successful coronavirus vaccine.
Right.
Why? Because the virus has mutants and variants. I'll actually get people who will engage me on this.
Right.
They'll say, oh, you're complaining about the vaccine's efficacy, but that's because there's a new mutant variation out there.
Right.
It's like, that's the point from the beginning. That's why do you think there's never been, in over a century of research, a single successful coronavirus vaccine? Because it varies. It makes itself viral evolution. It makes itself more transmissible and less deadly in order to survive.
Yeah.
And what's scary is what the vaccine might be doing is making it more deadly than it otherwise would be.
Right.
And these are like, I mean, when you're talking about, I always get his name wrong, Van Geertz or whatever it is. I mean, that guy is a Bill Gates guy. That guy's a longtime huge vaccine guy. And he came out from the beginning and said, this is a horrible idea.
Right.
You don't introduce a vaccine in the middle of the pandemic. It will increase the problem, particularly a pandemic of a virus that lives by mutating.
Right.
That's it. Because by introducing the vaccine, the very nature of viral evolution is you'll make the most lethal, most dangerous, most transmissible variants will be the ones that evolutionally emerge in that context. And that was Brett Weinstein's point. He was like, this is the nature of viral evolution. How do people not at least acknowledge this risk? I'm not saying it will happen, he was saying, but there's a risk of it, and nobody's even talking about it.
Even Fauci was talking about it very, very early on in the pandemic. Yeah. I mean, March 2020, I think it was, or February 2020. He's saying, well, when it comes to vaccine, ADE is a really big concern, and we need to be watching. He doesn't say that anymore, does he?
I mean, it's amazing. It's been a real-life Milgram experiment to see not only how compliant the world could be, but how they could slap him in the face and get him to still jump up and down.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the masks are the best example of that. I mean, you go through a whole month where mainstream media, every institutional government authority tells you, do not wear a mask. It will not work. It will not help. You're just stealing from doctors and nurses. Da, da, da. And then 2 months later, you absolutely have to wear a mask.
Right. It goes from masks are unnecessary to masks are mandatory with no transition in between.
It was just seeing, can we get people, I do think at some point they'll do something like, you have to, from now on, walking anywhere outdoors, you need to walk on 1 foot and hop.
Right.
And just see how many people will obey.
Will do it.
And you'll have a bunch of, you'll probably have 90% of people say, okay.
Because I guess I got to hop now,
They contradicted each other, and we did nothing about it. And they've contradicted each other throughout the vaccine. If you go back and look at Bill Gates' own conference that magically predicted a coronavirus vaccine a month before it formally hit the United States.
They're so smart,
Yeah, exactly. You look at that dynamic, and remember, and also it was around that time that his wife suddenly decided to get out of Dodge.
Yeah, that's right.
So, it's interesting timing. She put in a motion then what would become public knowledge a few months later.
Right.
If maybe it was the other side of Jeffrey Epstein's agenda.
I've been told by Washington Post that Jeffrey Epstein is not real. He's done
well, there's a certain eternal truth, as I always say. Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. You could add John McAfee to that.
Yeah.
The second one is Sally Yates is still corrupt, a longstanding corrupt prosecutor. And the third one is up to every, that varies. It depends on that's each individual's eternal truth.
Well, how about I don't trust Bill Gates? That's my eternal truth. I don't care whether it's selling me a computer system or a vaccine. You can stay the hell away from me.
Absolutely. This is a guy who deservedly got pied in the face multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the kind of scam artist and schemer. I mean, this was a guy who put his dates through a computer test. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, this guy is not the nothing. Why we would let this guy anywhere near public health is just you couldn't have even imagined it 20 years ago.
Yeah,
here we are.
I need to play some old interviews from Bill Gates from about 20 years ago when they're asking him questions. They're like, your competitors are wondering what you're up to, what mischievous plans you have. And this was back in like 95, 97 when like they were just concerned because he had such an overwhelming, monopoly on business software. And they were suspicious of him back then. And he's going, oh, no. I'm just trying to do my best here. It's just competition. And it's like, where did that skepticism go? I mean, that was, Meet the Press or whatever. They'd be on grilling Bill Gates. What are you really up to? That's gone.
Exactly. I mean, they totally exposed him. It was David Bowie who did it on behalf of the U.S. Justice Department in the antitrust cases that exposed him lying repeatedly in his deposition. It's credit to Gates that he remade himself. He looked at, and once again, he looked at the Rockefeller model.
Yep.
And he looked at how Rockefeller remade himself into the greed baron, the robber baron of robber barons, the mass eugenicist, to the guy that was the sweet old man who had dimes for children.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was the same mindset, same mentality.
It's all the sweater. It's the pink sweater, I swear.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally, there was an interview with like the heads of BlackRock and Goldman Sachs, and they're both wearing pink sweaters. I mean, it's a psychological imperative to them. It's like, look unthreatening so they don't suspect you. Wow, brilliant stuff. How Time Flies with Robert Barnes. His Twitter @Barnes_Law. The website, BarnesLawLLP.com. Thanks so much for being with us, sir.
Great.